I have always found these services, at the watch night service, most difficult because the timing is so difficult. You could go over time, you could under time, what you do when you have plenty of time left and what you do when you can't come to the close of your message. So you'll have to pretend that my time is correct. So use your imagination. Now, although I read Psalm 90, it's a very wonderful psalm, but a very sobering one as well. And it reminds us something of the majesty of God and the tiny, tininess of ourselves, how minute we are. And the planet we live on is minute. And if that is minute, and the solar system we are in is also minute, and the galaxy as compared to others is minute, then who are we and what are we? Yet we are told we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And the amazing thing is this, that we have a verse in the Bible that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. So he does think on us. That lovely psalm that ends with, he thinketh on me. So from the immensity to the tiny. Now my text is in Philippians, and in chapter 3 and verse 13. I'm taking it a little bit out of context because the context is very interesting, but very involved. But I want to make one point really. So perhaps a little more than that. The text is verse 13 in Philippians 3. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but those things which I do, forgetting those things which are behind, and reaching forth unto those things which are before. Now, I felt that that was a suitable verse for tonight. Forget this one thing, not half a dozen, this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before. So it is a suitable one. In a way, it's a comforting one, but in another way, as I prepared it, I became very convicted myself, because it does make you examine yourself if you're willing to do that. Not many of us are willing to examine ourselves, and if we do, we're not willing to make a diagnosis. But let us try. Let us try. Now, in the background here, in this particular chapter, there's a wonderful description of Paul's conversion. He's speaking and writing to Christians, so I must be clear, so that we have a common ground. He's not speaking to the unbeliever. The unbeliever can listen in and may benefit, and especially from the first part. Something happened in the life of Paul. He was called Saul of Tarsus. He was a very devout and a very religious man. And if anybody could boast of being good, he could have boasted about that. But yet there was something in his heart, you know, that he felt was missing. And in fact, the strange thing is sometimes when something is missing, we fight against it harder. I can remember before I came to the Lord and I was seeking, it was the evangelical, the Christian men in the college that used to get me so angry. I used to feel so irritated at everything they did because I suppose their lives frightened me and their lives really alarmed me. And instead of being comforted, I seemed to be indeed irritated, but it was for a good cause because it showed me something of myself. Paul certainly was angry, Saul of Tarsus. If ever there was hatred, he hated anybody that disagreed with him. He hated anybody who would in any way oppose the faith of their fathers, Judaism. And he was willing to go to any lengths. So you've got to understand where he's coming from. I'm not saying he's a cruel man, but he used cruelty as a servant of his hatred. And he would seek out Christians to have them put to death, tortured, imprisoned, men, women, and children. And his name was a fearful thing throughout the land. If they heard that Saul of Tarsus coming that way, they fled. They were afraid of him. And they had every reason to be afraid. He was a true servant of the high priest. And he did his work thoroughly and well. He was what you might call the head of the Gestapo in that period. He was somebody to be feared, and people were terrified of him. But God was not afraid of him. God had his hand on him. God saves sometimes a very unusual people. Oftentimes I wish he saved nice people, and they, all their lives they seem to be disinterested, but just nice. They'll sing hymns and psalms and come to chapel, and they remain nice, but they don't see their sin. They don't see their need. Some nice people are saved. Lots of nasty people are not saved. It's according to the sovereignty of God. Well, what happened to this man? Well, he had letters of authority to go to Damascus, and the job he had was to seek out the Christians and just exterminate them, get rid of this scourge. That was his primary aim. Now, he set off to kill. He set off in hatred. But nobody can tell what the end of one's journey is going to be, or what is going to happen during that journey either. Well, in this case, he is interrupted on his way. He sees a very bright light. It's an amazing light, brighter than the shining of the sun at midday. And he hears a voice. And the voice says to him, "Saul, Saul, why? Why persecutest thou me?" And then he said, you see, he'd already been prepared. "Who art thou, Lord?" And he said, "I am Jesus." And he's told then that he'd been appointed to preach the gospel to the Gentiles. He was going to have a very hard life. He was going to be despised. He was going to be stoned. He was going to be in all sorts of situations that were cruel, terrible scourgings, many, many things. There's a whole list of them. And you might say, if he'd known all that, would he have carried on or just forget the lot? But all that was ahead of him. And he was struck blind and taken to a man called Ananias. And Ananias is a little bit irritated. And he says to God, he says, "Do you know, this man hath done much harm to thy people in Jerusalem." That is, he was saying, why are you bothering with him? He's a rotter. Why bother with this cruel man? And God answers him, he is a chosen vessel. We will never understand the sovereignty of God. We'll never understand why unusual people are saved. Sometimes usual people are. You cannot really tell. It is an act of mercy. It is a miracle of grace every time. In one of his writings in the epistles, he says, "I have been bought with a price. My life is not my own." That's a big thing to say. Any of us willing to say that? Or do you say, "I'm in charge of my life. I decide what I do, what I don't do, what I give up and what I don't give up"? Are you like that? Then you haven't understood. You see, we are bought. We are very expensive creatures. We are bought at a price. And our life is not our own. Before we come to Christ, we are slaves. We are slaves of Satan. It takes a form of self-will. But it actually Satan and on our way to hell. But when it happens, when it happens, what do we see about Jesus? We learn that there was meaning in everything. There was meaning in his life. There was meaning in his death. Now, what was his meaning? The cross is a strange place. I find it very difficult to meditate on the cross. When I think of the suffering of my Saviour, I sometimes can hardly bear it. Pain on any level is most unpleasant, but pain with such brutality of nails and thorns and scourgings and insults and jibes. But you see, that wasn't all his pain. The worst pain was of God who loved him, punishing his son for our sins. That's something. I couldn't do it, could you? I haven't got that kind of love. But God has. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. It is small wonder in liberal theology and in superficial evangelism that they gloss over the real meaning of the cross, because it is so savage, it is so brutal, but it is so true. He died there for me. When I survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my richest gain I count but loss and pour contempt on what? On all my pride, and there's an awful lot of pride in us. Paul speaks plainly. He said, now then, if your life is not your own, it's his, and you have a journey, you have a life to live for the glory of God. You have a journey to make. Now, this is what this verse is about. How do you climb a hill or run a race, whichever figure you like to take? Now then, he's speaking about going forward. Some people stand still. Something has stopped them, and they stand still. And they waste the grace of God in their lives. And some people look back and do themselves and other people great harm. Some people go on. Some people go on. Paul speaks plainly. His position in Christ is secure. But now he's interested in our progression. Now, do you remember, you used to have school reports? Well, I suppose they still have them. But we used to give them to us before we went home. I'm thinking of our elementary schools now, of a school report. And your parents would look at them and they'd see little remarks made, as well as the comments, you know. You might say in some, very good. Some, excellent. Could try harder. Plenty of ability, but like chatting. Will not get anywhere, as he is now. And there used to be these comments. Then the headmaster or headmistress would write at the bottom, say, a disappointing result, hope for better things next year. You know, you've had those reports, and sometimes I've had a report, and I just didn't want my mother to see my maths results, you know, and other subjects I can't think of anything I was very good at. You know, but I dreaded taking my report home. Now then, the end of the year is a time to recap over the last year. What's it been like? What's it been like? He's talking here about determination for the new year. He says, rule number one, forgetting those things that are behind. Don't look back. Now then, you might say, well, my personal devotion hasn't been what it ought to be. And a lovely little phrase behind, oh, but the Lord understands. He understands very well, you're backsliding. Our personal devotion, what's it been like? Our thanksgiving to God and to one another, and kindness, acceptance of God's guidance rather than our will and our criticisms. We can forget old friends because we are too busy. We can forget lonely people because we have no time. There are so many, I can think of many, you know, in my life, in the churches I served. There are many people on their own. I used to visit them all, but there was some I feel I really must have time one day to have a long chat to them. And it never came round. They died before it happened. I have many regrets, and you must have over the last year many regrets. Something you said, something you've done, or something you've not said, or something you've not done. Now, if you're going to stay there, you're going to be very unhappy. Shall I sit down and say, oh, what an awful year it was. Oh, how I let God down. Oh, how I let my fellow Christians down. You know, you can do that if you like. That means standing still. But you won't stand still for long. You start looking back. What should we do? There's a thing called determination. I will climb this mountain. Shall we climb 2008? I will climb this mountain. Now, rule number one, stop looking back. You know, if you start looking back and when you're climbing, you won't get very far. You move on. Now then, we have a new year. I believe. I'm not afraid. There may be many wars, terrible wars break out. I do not know anything can happen these days. But this one thing I know, which is more important than any of the various news that we have on various channels, that everything is in God's hands. Nothing can happen to frustrate his plans. Nothing. To believe in God. So sometimes in the midst of our fears, our anxiety, for us and ours near and far, say to yourself, and mean it, I believe in God. And even if you have bad news about your health, I believe in God. I can remember the time when I was given 12 months at most to live, and my wife and I, they told her, and I said, how, did they tell you what they told me? And I said, yes. What shall we do? We're going to have a cup of tea. And we both decided we believed in God and went on for as many days as he would give. And he's given far more days than I thought. We are in his hands. Now, I'm asking you now, do you trust him? Do you trust him? Now, reaching forth for those things that are ahead. Now, reaching forth is a very powerful word. It's to stretch. Not just saying, well, if I feel like it, I'll do it. If I've got the energy, I'll do it. I'll try. I'll see, maybe next week. No, stretch. Do you remember physical training in the school? Do you remember the first one after the holidays? And how your limbs ached, do you remember? And the PT master would make you stretch, stretch, stretch until you got more able again. Well, in this one, you never stop stretching. You stretch until it hurts. You forgive until it hurts. You forget until it hurts. And you love until it hurts because you must go on. How can I do this? How can I forgive that? How can I stretch out to that? How can I love like that? How can I do good to them that is actually use me? How can I do that? And Paul says, well, I'll tell you how. Stretch forth. Who'll help me? He will. He giveth more grace when the burdens grow greater. He sendeth more strength when the labours increase. To added affliction, he added his mercy. To multiplied trials, his multiplied peace. His love has no limits. Mine has. His grace has no measure. His power has no boundary known unto men. For out of his infinite riches in Jesus, he giveth and giveth and giveth again. Ask for it. When we have exhausted our store of endurance. I can't take any more kind of talk. When our strength has failed and the day is half done, I can't lift myself to do it. when we reach the end of our hoarded resources, our Father's forgiving has only begun. If you believe, his love has no limits, his grace has no measure, his power has no boundary known unto men, for out of his infinite riches in Jesus, he giveth and giveth and giveth again. So what does this call for the new year? Action stations. In our little congregation here, action station. Now, who shall we put first? God. Every time. God. God first. Not you, not me, not your family, not your son, not your daughter, not your father, not your mother, but God. God first. Why? Well, we're a very, very short time on this earth, and we spend eternity in God's presence if we are his. So we want to get things right. Appreciate his son. Thank him every day for the forgiveness of sins. And keep close to him, as close as you possibly can. Practice the presence of God. Tell him at the beginning of the day, whatever you may be feeling, you may have a headache, you may not feel so well, but say to yourself, look, get up, get washed. You're not only if you're well enough, that is, if you're healthy, I mean. Do this. Practice the presence of God. You're walking in today, not on your own. You're walking to work, not on your own. You're going to a difficult situation, not on your own. I am with you. Practice the presence of God. Never further than thy cross, never higher than thy feet. Now then, what are we like? A lady in the college with my wife, in the Bible college where she studied, was a missionary in southern Sudan. And at the age of 33, she had sleeping sickness, died in that day and was buried in that day. And my wife happened to be in the college the day we heard of her death. And the principal, I think it was Mrs. Hooker, her name was, and said like this, wherever Jean went, she left a savour of Christ. Don't you think that's lovely? What kind of taste do I leave? What kind of taste do you leave when you talk to persons? When you finish talking, called in a home, on the bus or the phone or whatever, what kind of taste do you leave? Is Christ in you? Is he that close that you leave the savour of Christ? There's a hymn in our hymn book. It begins like this. Love to the loveless shown, that they might lovely be. Do things for God. Do things without expecting to be thanked. But do them. Give thanks to people who labour. I'm thinking of one school teacher now in my previous church. 50 years a school teacher, a Sunday school teacher. She was never thanked. But she never expected it. She did it as unto the Lord. All right? As unto the Lord. But it is a very nice thing sometimes to go up to somebody who's doing a week-by-week little job and say, well, thank you for what you're doing. It's an encouragement. You know, thank you goes a long way. It goes a long way. Talk to old people. Go to them and say, how are you today? And give them your name. Think of others. Reflect Christ. You know, Christ didn't pass people. When one man called out, he was blind. He said, oh, thou son of David. Well, you could hardly hear him. There was such a crowd then, such a terrific row and racket going on. And he said, bring him to me. Bring him to me. That's lovely. He heard him. He seemed to me to specialize in the brokenhearted, I mean, really so, you know, beggars who couldn't have nothing to eat hardly. I mean, we know nothing of poverty. We know nothing of suffering as compared to some places. I shall never forget, you know, one of the wars. Oh, no, it wasn't the wars, but that great tsunami thing. And there was one photograph on the television. It's indelible on my mind. He was a big, tall reporter. He was exceptionally tall. And by his side was an extremely small middle-aged lady. And he put her arm around her. She'd come home. Her home had gone, her husband and all her children. You know, everything. We've not known that. We've not known that, you know. Do you remember Suki Harley in More Than Notion, when a house went on fire? Do you remember? She praised God. She praised God. That's the amazing thing. Who are these strange people? Men and women of grace. They thank people. They appreciate people. They do all this. What are we really aiming for? Well, I'll tell you. We've got the time. Just about. In Psalm 133, this was given to me. I'd like to tell you the circumstances, but they were absolutely tremendous. And if there will be, and I think there will be, this psalm will be greatly used in that revival. I am convinced about that. It's Psalm 133, and we all know it. Let me get it correctly, though. It says, it talks about the unity of the brethren. And that's not such an easy thing. How wonderful, you know, it is of those brethren and what it is like and the wonder of it all. Here we are. Are you ready for it? This is a new Bible. Yes. Lovely. Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. That's a task. We can be united in doctrine. All right? That doesn't make us very friendly, particularly. We can be united in our aim as a church. Very good. But to be united in our hearts, bearing one another's burdens, caring for one another, healing wounds, helping in that way, encouraging where there never is encouragement. Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. It is like the precious ointment upon the head that ran down upon the beard, even Aaron's beard, and went down to the skirts of his garments, as the dew of Hermon, and as the dew that descended upon the mountains of Zion. For there the Lord commanded the blessing. Jesus Christ went out of his way for us. Are we willing to go out of our way for him? Think, my friends. You know, I don't know how much time I've got left, but I'm just telling you from my heart that this unity has to be worked on. There's no church yet achieved it in this generation. We have to. It's a wonderful thing. It's like ointment. It's like the dew of heaven itself. And it is at that place that the Lord commanded the blessing, even life forevermore. God doesn't need a denomination. He only needs people with a heart for him. Have we got a heart for him? Then start climbing, forgetting those things which are behind, forgetting them. They'll only hold you back and make you miserable. Forgetting those things which are behind. Be new, be fresh, be full of grace. Stretch out until every part of you is aching with the effort to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. and that you'll be a benediction wherever you go, that you'll leave the savour of Christ in church, in every home, in every shop, in every place you go to. Everywhere, everywhere, stretch out. Do it. His love has no limits. His grace has no measure. His power, you said, oh, I've loved enough. Not at all. His love has no limits. His grace has no measure. His power has no boundary known unto men. For out of his infinite riches in Jesus, he giveth and giveth and giveth again. Now, we're going to sing a hymn, and then I'm going to pray. It's hymn number 87.